Welcome to Season 6 of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast. We are absolutely thrilled to have you on board. We're talking to experts who know their stuff, the patients who've experienced these technologies firsthand, the vendors who provided the tools, and the thought leaders shaping the future. Together, we will uncover the ways to make the lives of those relying on these incredible technologies even better. We hope these discussions are going to be the highlight of your day.
Hello, everyone. My name is Joris Peels, and this is another episode of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast with Brent Wright. How are you doing, Brent?
Hey, I'm doing well, Joris. You know what's interesting about this podcast and is really the one of the last ones of the last season is we get a lot of comments on the one about how prosthetists and orthotists can be involved in multiple things, kind of like when we dreamt a little bit, like, hey, you could, yes, you could be into shoes, but you could be into bike fitting, you could fit the body, potentially exoskeleton. I can't tell you how many comments I've gotten about that specific episode, and it was really neat.
Okay, that's good to know. That was a bit of an off-the-cuff thing, so I'm glad that actually went well, to be honest.
Yeah, well, you know, what's interesting is that I had actually an educator reach out to me and said, you know what, I really want to have my students listen to this episode, and I really have to think about how I can maybe put some of this into my curriculum as far as we can fit the body, we can fit, you know, organic objects. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I really do believe in that, by the way. So I do think that would be really good that maybe we can make a difference there and make people discover new things they could be doing anyway, and so with their existing skills and infrastructure. So I think it'd be really, really exciting. That's really cool, man. Thanks for telling me that.
Yeah. Well, hey, if you, as a listener, have any feedback for us, want us to talk about anything, shoot us a message. We love encouragement. Sometimes it feels like we're speaking just to each other, but it's so great to hear from.
We would do this. We would still do this if we were just speaking to each other.
100%. Yeah. We were doing it anyway before the podcast, for sure. So now we're just recording it. But nonetheless, it's super encouraging to hear that people, yes, are listening and getting something out of it. And I really like it. We love feedback. So if you have it, positive or negative, we'll take it.
Perfect. All right. So who's on the show today?
Well, Joris, I'm super excited about having Tony Gutierrez on the show. He is with Bionic, and we've had Sagar on before, which is actually still one of the most listened to episodes for the Orthotics and Prosthetics podcast. But Tony has really taken to some of the digital technology side of things. He manages a myriad of things. I can't even imagine how he gets anything done or sleeps, because now they have offices really all over the U.S., especially East Coast and Central. And so you've got multiple time zones and all that. But I wanted to have him on. He's not only a fan of the show, but he said, hey, I really love what you guys are doing and would love to share also about some of the stuff they have coming down the pike, which is OneSource. And we'll dive into OneSource a little bit. But the idea is, and Joris and I, Joris, you and I have talked about this, how can there be one place to get everything? So your electronic medical records, your fabrication digitally, scanning, your notes, and getting all the stuff ready so you can actually bill the insurance and get paid for the device. And that is essentially what OneSource is, at least what I've understood of it. So I'm really excited about diving into that and then also hearing Tony's journey as well.
Perfect. And then I think they're going to be sponsoring us as well, right?
Yes. Yeah. So they said, we love what you guys are doing, and they're going to be sponsoring us on some of these episodes leading up to AOPA. And so I think it's awesome. I think it's great.
Okay. Good stuff. So welcome to the show, Tony. Super nice to have you here.
Thank you for the invite, guys. It's a pleasure and love to see the work that you guys are doing, bringing a lot more attention to O&P and bringing a lot more attention to the digital workflow. It's definitely very exciting.
Awesome. Awesome. And so first off, like, how did you get involved with the prosthetics and orthotics?
Oh, I got lucky, I guess. I don't think if I tried to recreate this journey, it could ever happen. When I started undergrad, I thought I was going to be a physician. That was my goal until 8 a.m. chemistry and biology labs hit. And, I wasn't a fan of those. So they were god awful boring. That just found that wasn't my jam right away. So I ended up completing with my undergraduate from IUPUI in Indianapolis with a mathematics degree. And the entire time I had the opportunity to do research in a biomechanics laboratory. So I really learned a lot about the human body and approaching it as a machine, and how things work, how the muscles and joints work together to perform a motion. And when I graduated IUPUI, I went on to the University of Wisconsin, and I was actually in a PhD biomechanics track. I really was interested in prosthetics, but coming from a mathematics background, none of my advising faculty had any clue what prosthetics were. So I thought that I'd kind of attack it from the research route. So I was my graduate work at University of Wisconsin was really focusing on balance during walking and how different joint mechanics and the central nervous system work together to keep us upright and stop us from falling. You know, really, really a simplified biomechanical model to say, how do people stay upright and walk? And during that journey, I had the opportunity to present at a conference at the Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago. And as I was walking around and meeting people, I walked in and received a tour of the Northwestern University Prosthetics and Orthotics Center. And that's when the bells started going off. So I was like, I can do this. I can play with all these cool things. I can help people. I can build things. I can help people walk again, use their hands again. Sign me up. This is what I'm interested in. So I actually ended my time at UW at a master's level and then enrolled in a NUPOC's prosthetic certificate program back in 2010. And you know, my interest at that time purely lied in looking at the human body as a mechanical problem that needed to be solved when there was some kind of injury or missing part or whatever it may be. I soon learned throughout my career that really is a small part of it. When you're working with patients and trying to provide a holistic treatment plan, but that's my journey, you know, and I think if I started again today, I don't know if I could get back to that same spot, but, you know, I love the opportunity to use my hands every day to build something every day and to have impact on people's lives every day.
That's super cool. I think we've listened to a whole bunch of these right now. No one's journey into this industry is standard, right? And no, you know, there's always a lot more purpose behind it than a lot of other people. There's always this helping thing, and everyone's way of getting here is always just like completely circuitous and kind of crazy. So that sounds really interesting. And what did you, but what did you do after that? How'd you continue your career and helping people and getting the stuff met?
So I was, you know, when we moved back to go to Northwestern, I'm from the Northwest Indiana, just outside of Chicago area. So I was, you know, we were able to kind of settle down here, really lived in my parents' basement for a few months while we kind of figured out which way we were going and which way was up. But just after school, I was fortunate to, you know, land a residency with a place that I had been shadowing at during the online portion of my school at Northwestern. And I had practiced with a small practice named Orthotic Prosthetic Specialists in Northwest Indiana under a dear friend of mine, Joe Rooker, for about 3.5 years. And then he, you know, he was ultimately kind of winding down in his career, and I was just getting started. You know, so that was the, you know, that at that point it made sense for me to kind of, you know, look to join another practice, and that's when the journey at Bionic started. But you know, one of the, I think the kookiest parts of this story is, and Brent's probably of this age range too in the field. You know, during my residency, it was great. It was a residency. I learned everything. I was in a lab building everything, you know, staying at the lab till midnight, modifying sockets, making prostheses for people. But at the end of my residency, we had this wonderful thing crash into the industry called Medicare RAC audits, which really almost crippled the industry, because orthotics and prosthetics back then, and really for its entire existence, was a network of mom and pop shops that are just in an area serving their community, taking care of the patients. And the RAC audits really, really affected the industry in a terrible way. It created such a financial pressure on all these small practices that are, you know, just doing what they can to, you know, to make a small living, make a little bit of money, take care of their patients. But there was a time I remember during just after my residency that we got RAC audits on 22 prosthetic cases in a row, which had anywhere from a 6 to 12 month resolution period by the time paperwork was acquired, all of the appeals were completed, and it was a challenge in this small practice, especially. You know, Joe's practice, his notes before I walked in were, patients, a BK amputee, they're going to be a K3 level, expect good results. They need, you know, low profile carbon fiber foot and a pin socket system. That was an evaluation, you know, and then we had to radically change the way we thought about evaluating patients, the level of complex medical documentation we had to collect from not only ourselves, but supporting physical therapists, occupational therapists, physicians, and nobody knew the language of prosthetics and orthotics, nor the rules to be able to get these things reimbursed in a timely manner. So that really is, you know, that's what I was born into the field of prosthetics and orthotics. So that's, you know, a lot of what I do today was born out of my pure hatred of writing long notes.
And this for people, we have some European listeners, we have listeners from all over the place right now. So a lot of people outside the US. So this is just essentially, it was like a process. It used to be the reimbursement process was super, super simple, and they basically wanted to make it more traceable, more notes. What was the logic behind them doing this?
You know, it's, I don't know if there is any logic behind it, but I guess that there was probably some times where there was overprescription of devices going on in the prosthetic and orthotic industry. And they probably dug into some cases and found some fraud going on, throughout practices, or overprescription of devices or technology for patients. So they wanted to make it clear that as prosthetists and orthotists, we're a supplier of medical goods to patients. And we need to practice under the order and direction of a physician to ensure that what we're planning to supply for this patient is truly meeting their unmet medical needs and going to support them to regain their mobility or activity in any way possible.
I think the other thing, Tony, and maybe we can kind of bounce each, you know, the what was going on too. It's still crazy. We get looped in, Joris, with wheelchair vendors and the same people that sell canes and walkers and crutches and that sort of thing. And there was a lot of fraud that was going on in that space. And so when you start looking at those dollar claims and then potentially some other big dollar claims that are kind of associated or allied to that, then prosthetics was like a very easy target at that point in time as well. And so that's to me, that's another catalyst, is the orthotic and prosthetic industry never separated itself out of this kind of durable medical equipment and established themselves as like a professional field that is on par with, say, physical therapists, because physical therapists did it, occupational therapists, and then obviously physicians. And so this kind of guilt by association was also happening during this time.
Okay. And that is then it also makes sense why you guys don't get paid for your work, but you instead you get paid for a device.
That's right.
It's like a little now this makes sense. I'm so glad.
We're connecting the dots, aren't we?
Exactly.
Well, okay. And here's a crazy story for you, and I don't think I mind sharing it. A friend of mine has sold his business since then, but he was a wheelchair provider in a like high-end wheelchair provider. He said, literally, Brent, I had a guy show up in a Bentley covered in gold chains wanting me to build wheelchairs for him. It's like the Nigerian prince scheme. And he wasn't alone in that. And so you have these people that are probably in jail now because of fraud, but literally going after true businesses, and these true businesses that were kind of struggling anyway and looking for a quick buck kind of got sucked into this thing, and it just became a mess. So it's crazy, some of this stuff.
I think that's another 6-hour episode.
You know
it. Oh, wow, that's crazy. But anyway, so how did this inspire you, Tony, to start a business? And what did you want to do with this then?
So, you know, I was helping my friend Joe and, you know, a couple other clinicians in the practice who just had no experience in writing a true SOAP note, or objective assessment of the patient, and a plan or a treatment plan for the patient. And that seemed to be where things were going, in the field of prosthetics and orthotics, and communicating that information in your plan to physicians to help them be a part of your plan and support what your medical decision-making was for the patient. So I wanted to be able to say, hey, Joe, you're a great clinician, but you type with your pinkies at 3 words per minute. How can I help you see all the patients that you want to see and help your practice, you know, remain financially viable while battling changes in the way that Medicare is looking at reimbursement for prosthetics and orthotics. So that's where I started really playing with automation of documentation, creating good templates, creating note templates, L-code templates, physician communication templates, and trying to create that in a easy to use system for Joe, who really only saw the value of a computer of checking his fantasy football scores, but you know had invested in his practice to utilize multiple different medical systems to make it easier. So that was that first goal is how can I help Joe? You know, if I leave this practice, I don't want Joe's practice to close because he's a good friend of mine. He still takes me golfing every once in a while. So that was kind of the project in the beginning is let's make sure Joe has, you know, the best leg he can stand on to fight these things in his small practice. And you know, like I said, purely out of a dislike or displeasure of writing notes, I tried to create these automatic pathways.
Okay. And then what did that result in now? What did Bionic, when you started, was just a practice, right? Or
Yeah. So when I started with Bionic, we had 4 clinics in a 50-mile radius covering Northwest Indiana and Illinois. And we had about 20 people on our team. And yeah, it's been quite a journey to get from there to 50 clinics in 14 states. But what we did is we really focused on growing our practice in our area and being able to integrate more strongly into this surrounding medical community. And Brent, I'm sure your practice can speak the same language as this. When you do good work and you take care of patients, more and more patients start coming in your door. The community recognizes your efforts. They recognize that you're of value to whatever population that you're working with, and then they're going to support you. And, you know, at Bionic, we were doing great work. We were growing. We were being asked to open offices in new locations. And shortly after I joined, you know, we were at 13 clinics in that same area. And not much change in the amount of clinicians we had, because I think we're all well aware there's a clinician shortage, you know, and, you know, we have a challenge in our practice because we butt up to the city of Chicago. So a lot of people that want to come to this area want to work in Chicago, don't necessarily want to work in our lovely state of Indiana, which is great, by the way. I highly recommend anyone come visit Indiana. It's a wonderful place. So we were forced to figure out how can we be more efficient considering we have limited resources. And you know, the next real, you know, propelling point for me was I had my practice and I had my own fabrication lab in my practice. I had two small children. They were 4 and 2 at the time. And I was, you know, averaging with myself and my resident, probably 25 prosthetic patients a month. And my resident was managing another 50 or 60 orthotic patients a month. So we were busy and I was building everything for my practice and a couple other practices. So there was a couple of months in a row where I'm getting in at 5 a.m. to make sure I can pour all the casts up and modify them and get check sockets pulled throughout the day, getting all my notes done throughout the day so I can see these patients. And, you know, we're prosthetists and we love our patients. So we tell everyone, hey, we can see you in 2 days for this check socket fitting. Let's go. We're excited to get you up and going. So, you know, I drive home 45 minutes, have dinner with my family, put the kids to bed and come back to the lab till 11 or 12 o'clock at night. And that was just a very regular occurrence for me. And I started to notice burnout occurring. And that's not a good sign, you know, so early in your career. You know, you're so dedicated to your craft and helping people that it starts to affect every part of your life. So that's when, you know, we bought our first 3D printer. I think Brent was actually one of the first people I called, said, hey, I bought this. Can you tell me how it works? I don't know if you remember that, Brent. You were helping me and my resident at the time.
Oh, yeah. That was fun.
I tried to do it in some settings, and it was great. We had this 3D printer. Hey, this can help us print sockets. I go to print my first socket, and it takes 64 hours to print. And if I don't watch it the entire time, I would end up with a big bowl of spaghetti at the bottom of the printer because something would go wrong. But it was that step in the right direction that, hey, we can offload our workflow just a little bit, you know, with implementation of this technology. And, you know, then that's when the automation of documentation really started to take place. You know, I don't know what health record system you guys use, Brent, but we use OPI in Bionic.
Yep.
If you sit down and have a young active patient that needs a microprocessor knee and a, you know, maybe a vertical shock foot come into your clinic and truly document why they need to get out of a mechanical knee and get into a microprocessor knee and build that chart note, check all your L codes, make sure your justifications are correct and you don't have any wrong names or wrong words in there. Order all your parts and then go back in the lab and take that wonderful cast you just took and modify it and pull a check socket. That's easily 3.5 hours worth of physical manpower to be able to get that complete. And when you have that volume of patients per month, then you have, you know, that 2 to 2.5 to 3.5 hours of just data entry into a computer per patient. That's not what we're built for. And I know Brent can agree with that 100%. You know, we're not orthotists and prosthetists because we love writing notes and love checking all the right boxes. You know, we're orthotists and prosthetists because we're excellent at seeing a biomechanical problem and applying a solution to it and helping someone become mobile again. So that's really when I started to turn my focus, you know, what can I control? The printing technology wasn't quite there yet to help us fully automate that side of the practice. But I could really focus on how can I make this time I spend in an EHR more efficient, you know, and that's really where the idea of one source started to take off. You know, we were able to, I was able to create a custom software solution utilizing some free tools that I found. And I have a little bit of coding experience, but nothing extensive, just a lot of hard work and man hours. I think I spent 5,000 hours making it so I don't have to write a 1-hour note at this point in time, but That's where we really saw the implementation of a system like we call OneSource, you know, being really utilized in a practice. How can we get great, consistent results that are error-free and only take a few minutes of a clinician's time, and then you can have a support team behind them, really support them so they can focus on what matters most. And, you know, during this time, you know, I think in the beginning of my residency, I spent 90% of my time with a patient, 10% of my time within a computer. And I feel that has changed over this past 13, 14 years, where you spend maybe 20% of your time with the patient, and the rest of your time, you're trying to make sure, hey, how do we make sure we get this device paid for so we can keep seeing more patients?
Take us through kind of the old way, right? I know you said there was a time that you had to dedicate it to all that. And so just for our listeners, and some people that listen are not in the O&P field, so they don't necessarily, or they may be a patient, they don't understand the pain that we feel on the backside, the stuff that they don't see. And then can you take us through how that would work in OneSource?
Yes. So, you know, when you come into my clinic, you know, we love to spend about an hour with you, getting to know you, understanding, you know, your history, how you got to this point of your amputation, whether it's a new amputation or whether you've been an amputee for a while. But we need to understand, you know, what your activity level was prior to your injury, what your goals are, and what we think your activity level can be with the implementation of a new prosthesis. We've been fortunate in prosthetics over the last decade to have a lot of wonderful technology introduced that really, you know, helps our patients do amazing things on a daily basis. Now, with this new technology that's been introduced, there's always a challenge on the payment side. So we, like anyone, we want to help you out, but we also need to get reimbursed for our services. And Joris brought it up that, you know, prosthetists and orthotists, we're not paid for time. We're paid for a device and helping manage that device over a specific period of time. So, you know, after I saw you for that hour in clinic where we really, you know, put together this holistic treatment plan, you know, me and the patient together, you know, I would take my cast of the patient and then go straight to my computer and try and document all of this stuff in a clear manner that I have to take time and review what your specific insurance policy is and what level of technology we can fit you with, as well as what the requirements for implementing that level of technology are. And not all insurance policies are different, so there's the time for the research on that. Then we have to properly say, I think, you know, you've been using a mechanical knee for the past couple of years. You have a history of falls. You feel like it's holding you back and everything you want to do. There's a microprocessor knee that can really enhance your stability, that can really help you regain that independence that you've been struggling to find since your amputation. This is why I think it's medically necessary for you. And then when you rely on support from the manufacturers, they give you all of the technical bells and whistles lingo that tell you how it works, but they don't really provide a lot of support as to why it works. So that's really a large part of our documentation timeline, is trying to match this level of technology to your specific needs as a patient. So what we've done in OneSource is being a large practice that sees a large volume of patients and deals with a large scope of insurance policies and criteria for coverage for all sorts of medical devices, we were able to create a more efficient system that can allow our practitioner to document all of this information with all of the complexities of the ever-changing reimbursement landscape in about 7 to 10 minutes once they become efficient with it. So once, you know, that, and a lot of our practitioners will do this point of care documentation in the room. So as soon as they walk out of the room in that hour time frame, they've seen you, they've evaluated your needs, they've documented what those needs are. And their charting is complete. They don't have to go sit down for another hour and a half, 2 hours to focus on the rest of it to make sure that, hey, I told you I'm going to get you your prosthesis in about 3 weeks. But I messed up my coding 3 times and I messed up what I had needed your physician to say. So now it's a 6-week, 8-week timeline. Or, hey, we got denied by your insurance company because our documentation didn't say that, you know, why this specific feature of a microprocessor knee is beneficial for you. So now we have to fight and appeal that for the next 2 months to be able to get you what you deserve and what you need. So we've created this nice holistic platform that our clinicians can quickly navigate and really pinpoint the medical need of any device that they want to give to a patient. All before they leave the room, and then and their L codes that describe the prosthesis are correct. The justifications to support those L codes specific to your medical needs are correct. The documentation that we need the physician to corroborate and make a part of their medical record is correct. And we can, you know, get that information off the same day to our referral sources to really expedite that authorization process. And then, you know, really with the implementation of the digital workflow and utilizing printers in our practice, you know, we're not staying till 10 o'clock at night pouring casts up and modifying them anymore. You know, we have the ability to capture a limb shape with a scan in a matter of minutes and get to our computer, you know, modify your scan based on your clinical needs and send that scan right to the printer and get it started. And you know, at the height of my time seeing patients on a full duty, I was utilizing this one source system. I would have a patient come in. My first patient would be at 8 o'clock. We'd do the evaluation process. I would scan them. I would say, hey, go get a cup of coffee or breakfast. By the time you come back, maybe around 10 o'clock, I'm going to have your check socket ready for you. And we're going to get you a walk in today. We're going to see how things are working. If we need to make any changes, go out and grab lunch, come back, you know, at 1 o'clock, we'll have a second check socket ready. And that's, you know, that's a model that really, you know, disrupted our practice because I'm sure Brent can speak to it too. You know, you usually see a patient, come back in a week, we have a check socket. Oh, it's 10 ply too big. Oh, I'm sorry. Come back in another week. Okay, this one's pretty close, but, you know, we need to, you know, we didn't schedule enough time for us to be able to walk you today. So come back in a week. We'll get you up and walk in. We're already 3 weeks into that timeline and 3 weeks of immobility or discomfort for that patient, depending on what the level is, before we're even ready to say, okay, this prosthesis is ready, but is our authorization in time? Is our compliance good? Are we able to say, hey, we have this prosthesis fully authorized for you and we can meet that 3 week goal? And chances are in most practices, no, that's not occurring. You know, we're seeing more and more pushback from different payer sources saying, this isn't enough. This isn't enough. You haven't justified this. So it's taking more and more time of our clinicians really focused on the medical necessity, documentation, charting time. And all that's doing is delaying our care. And the ultimate, you know, payer for that is the patient. You know, it's, you know, we're delaying your ability to get what you need in a timely fashion, because there's so many things that we can't control in this process.
Okay, so if I'm looking at this from a business side, so first off, this is a tool for when I fully adopt the whole digital workflow, this can tie everything together. So that's good. But I think for a lot of people listening, they'll be like, yeah, okay, that's like, yeah, never or 10 years or something. But I'm liking very much this time saved. Do you have any kind of indication? Like, it seems like you were talking about 3 hours versus 7 minutes. Is it, you know, by adopting this yourself, do you know how much time you guys are saving, like in hours or expressed in a kind of way? Or,
you know, it's the same journey that it took our clinicians on with 3D printing. When we first launched printing into our practice, we all had hiccups in the beginning. We had machines that couldn't, you know, keep up with the time that we needed or couldn't match the time that we could do in a manual fabrication standpoint. But once we were able to implement some high flow printers and really create that speed in the process where we can get a diagnostic socket in just about an hour or so, all of our clinicians went from, I'm never going to use printing. It doesn't work. It's never going to be vital or it's never going to be a crucial part of my practice, to 6 months later is like, I don't know how I ever did it without this digital workflow. I have so much more time. We're seeing our practitioners' efficiency go through the roof because they're able to see more patients in a day. They're able to build their practice at the rate that they want to build it. And they're all going home at 5 o'clock. They're not carrying the burden of, I have to get my notes done, or I have to get in the lab and modify a socket done with them. So, you know, OneSource has kind of had the same effect on all of our clinicians. You know, when we tried to implement it with everybody, it was a bunch of naysayers in the beginning. Well, I've already got all my templates built and they work for me and they work well. And, you know, I don't think this is going to work to, you know, within our practice alone, since full scale implementation in November of last year, we've had about 800 prosthetic cases go through OneSource and well over 1,000 orthotic cases go through OneSource. And, you know, the time saving that we've seen is, reimbursement challenges are real across the board. And let's say we want to implement something like a microprocessor ankle for a below the knee patient. On the authorization side, it would typically take us at least 2 rounds of appeals with a payer source to be able to get that approved and implemented on a patient. And we're starting to see the documentation packet that we're able to submit, you know, go through on first pass on these authorizations. And it took our clinicians not several hours to fully understand and document this and match the needs to the patient's specific insurance policy. It just took them a few minutes and they were able to, you know, march along, provide that next patient with care. So I guess that's a long answer to your question, Joris. I don't have a physical, you know, time in front of me, but I know that if I sat down in front of my computer and documented what I had to document, like the output of OneSource, it would probably take about an hour and a half. And I'm probably one of the most skilled in the practice. So, you know, we have practitioners from residents all the way up to 65 years old in our practice, you know, and so for even seeing some of the older guys and gals that have fully adopted OneSource into their practice and, you know, really are utilizing it is awesome. And another bright point of it is, you know, because of our practice has grown, fortunately, over these past couple of years, you know, we see a lot more cases coming through than the average small practice. So we're able to catch reimbursement trends and make changes to the OneSource platform on the fly. So, you know, maybe like 6 months ago, we noticed that every claim coming from a Medicare payment plan was getting denied for ultralight and acrylic codes because they weren't properly documented in the chart note and the work order. So we were able to implement a change into OneSource overnight, essentially, after we realized this trend, and we were able to stop that, you know, those denials, you know, and those denials in authorizations coming through that delayed patient care. So, I mean, the time saved, you know, can't just be measured on the clinical side. I think it can also be measured on the administrative side, and it's been significant for our practice.
Yeah, and totally. I think, and obviously, of course, patient care could be greatly improved. And like you said, an example with the coming back for lunch kind of thing. But I also like this from a business perspective. I love the idea of just this profit velocity. Like the idea is I get my customer in quicker. I get my money quicker. I can invest quicker, pay people quicker. Everything, my cash flow is much better. And I love that idea of being able to optimize for that kind of thing. And then, and also like, you know, just be able to spot where the problematic areas are. You know, maybe for some people, it doesn't make sense to do certain things. Because you actually, if you look at it, you know, the it's not profitable for you. So I think, and I love this just for the profit velocity perspective. And, you know, especially if you sometimes with a mistake have to wait a number of weeks for getting approval and then a number of weeks as subsequent to that for cash flow, I think that could be super valuable for either businesses that are small or those that are cash constrained or those that are expanding very quickly.
Yeah, and that's where we really see the value of OneSource stepping in is to help that small practice that wants to grow. You know, if you look across LinkedIn, everyone's looking for another practitioner right now. Everyone needs help. You know, everyone's trying to grow their business as efficiently as they can. And that average small business owner, they're not just seeing patients, they're also the accountant. They're also accounts receivable. They're also accounts payable. And that's a challenge, right? You know, you have all these other side jobs. You're trying to negotiate the best possible prices that you can with your vendors to get yourself a break. But, you know, you can't compete with some larger companies because you just don't have the volume to do it. So, you know, your cost of goods can be quite high. And then if you factor in your time cost as well, you know, it really is a struggle to remain profitable and grow your business as a small practice.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it? Like, there might be room exactly for kind of a Chick-fil-A kind of model in this business, right? Where you're saying that, you know, where Chick-fil-A is not like, you can't have six franchises. You're a franchisee, but you're limited to one thing, and they actually make the franchising, the cost is very low, but the effort is very high. Do you see a model for stuff like that for kind of this hybrid chains where it's more about working together, or, you know, we're talking about a kind of a, I don't know what you call it, like a purchasing combination where, you know, you don't do anything together, but we buy stuff all together so we have a better negotiating power?
So, yeah, I mean, there are some buying groups around, you know, and those can be complicated, but beneficial for the group as a whole. You know, and I think, you know, that's the ideal model that we would love, you know, our clinics to grow into and everyone's clinics to grow into is, you know, you feel like, you know, prosthetics can operate like almost like in a retail space. You know, it's not your traditional old building that has, you know, a lab in the back and it stinks like resin and it's dusty everywhere because we're a bunch of kids playing in plaster in the background, getting dirty and grinding on carbon fiber. You really want to try and, you know, make this experience as positive as you can for the patient. And, you know, with, you know, in our one source platform, we're not, you know, we're part of the platform that we're launching is we have agreements with all the major manufacturers in the lower limb and upper limb prosthetic space so that we can utilize our size and our buying power and pass those savings on to those smaller practices. And that's really where we see the value of this. In addition to the automation of compliance and automation of digital workflow and providing diagnostic sockets.
Mm, that's really cool. And then you were talking about this typical model, right? Where you were doing, what was it, 30 patients a month, right? And then you were doing 50, 60 orthotics. You had a resident yourself. You know, that's already, you know, you were, that was a situation was for you was a couple of years ago. You know, how profitable is that, you know?
You know, is it profitable? You know, define profit, right? The amount of time that we had.
No, are you like, oh, I'm going to shop for Porsches? Or are you like barely, you know, you have to like every cent you spend or your kids spend, you have to kind of like,
I think Brent and his practice can speak to this as well. You know, if we bill for a dollar, we're lucky to collect 80 cents, you know, on the high end. And chances are we're fighting to get from 65 cents to 80 cents. So, you know, that cost of goods and that cost of time really, really does eat in to that profit within the practice. You know, you would see the cost of some of these prostheses and assume that all prosthetists and practices are flying around in helicopters and driving Porsches. But I don't think that's the case. I've got a Subaru Outback with 250,000 miles on it, you know, so.
You don't even live in Vermont. Yeah.
hey, don't hate on the Subaru. I love it. I think we're getting.
Yeah, well, you got to have that cars. Chicago. Holy moly.
Yeah, we get a lot of, we're in the snow belt. So that all-wheel drive is wonderful.
Joris, I think what's interesting about all this and what we're not talking about. So yes, it's amazing for patients, a quick turn. Yes, it's great for profitability, not profitability. You get your cash faster, right? So it's better for cash flow. So let's take the profitability out. But the one thing that, you know, Tony kind of alluded to at the very beginning, I mean, you heard his journey, 5 o'clock in the morning, and he's pouring casts at 10 o'clock at night, ready for the next day. Well, I can tell you definitively that this next generation of prosthetists have no tolerance for that kind of work. It's not that they don't work hard. They're not going to work those types of hours. They want to work smarter, not harder. And so one thing that's interesting, and as I'm hearing Tony explain this, like Bionic can now go out and say, listen, we want you heading home as quickly as possible. We want you to be going home knowing that all your notes are complete, your justification, all that stuff. We call it the hot potato, right? The hot potato is in somebody else's hands. It's either on the 3D printer, it's in the administration hands, but it's not in your hands. And I think a lot of younger clinicians coming out of school are going to be looking for situations to get themselves into where there's this, and I know it's cliche, and I hate even to bring it up, like this idea of work-life balance. Because like for me, Tony, and probably it's very much the same, my work and the play, they go together and it's in harmony. But for this newer generation of clinicians, it's, you know, once the clock strikes whatever, they're off unless they're on call and they're out with friends, family, what have you. And that's really the expectation. So if you're able to help them achieve what they feel is the work-life balance, quote unquote, you have something to, you have an advantage to getting some of these new clinicians, you know, from school. And that's the only way right now that you're going to be building a practice and growing, because like Tony said, there's not clinicians just hanging out there looking for jobs. Like, you've got to do this organically. I guess I would say I'm a little bit jealous on that side, because that's something that, you know, we have some of the different 3D printing side of things, but this front end is a big deal.
Yeah, Brent, and really a lot of this inspiration is drawn from work that you're doing. You know, it's seeing how much effort you've put into this digital workflow automation is really inspiring. You know, and it, you know, it changed. That was the first thing that changed our practice significantly. You know, having these printers working all day, and you know, right now our practice as a whole is at a 95% digital prosthetic workflow on the diagnostic, preparatory, and flexible inner. We're still combining the hybrid approach using a lot of laminations. Haven't fully dived in like your group has with utilizing a more definitive approach to printing sockets. But the inspiration, you know, you can't go unnoticed in this, because seeing what your team is doing and the effort you've put into industry to really try and change a thought process, you know, it was inspiring. And that's really where a lot of this took off, you know, and really said, okay, we were able to tackle the problem of digital workflow. Now let's tackle the problem of patient chart workflow. And we're starting to see the fruits of it.
That's super cool. That's super cool. But is this something you want to keep for yourselves, or are you going to be selling this? How does this work?
So we're not doing a subscription model or selling the software. What OneSource has been able to do is we have agreements in place with big prosthetic companies like Össur, Autobach, Proteor, College Park, Bulldog Tools, Cypress Adaptive, to essentially be able to distribute their products as part of the OneSource platform. And what we're doing is, because of the size of our group and the buying power of our group, our goal is to pass those discounts on to you. So to get in the taste of OneSource, let's walk through an average workflow and walk through some scenarios. Brent, if you went back to your workshop right now, are you going to see all of the same boxes from the same manufacturer on your shelf, or do you operate in a greatest hits landscape for prosthetics like the rest of us do?
Well, I mean, we try to consolidate as much under, and I think that's where OneSource is very interesting, is like, yes, there's going to be different brands, but man, we much prefer to write one check to a distributor, so to speak, than to write 30 checks to multiple places. And that's just the, you know, where we are in practice. That saves us time unprocessing, and it, you know, it saves us some money there too. But I think that's what's interesting, is this idea of it's one check. you know, for this, and you get essentially a leg in a box, right?
Yep, essentially, you know, you can, you know, as you say, for instance, you know, you have a new BK patient that comes into your clinic, you know, you identify them as a K3 patient that's going to need a hydraulic ankle with a pin locking suspension. Within the OneSource platform, you know, you can choose liner options in both silicone and TPE from Össur, Ottobock. Those are our primary liner providers. Then you can choose your alignable components from Bulldog that make the most sense for you. You can choose your suspension mechanism from Bulldog as well. And then you can choose your foot option. You know, in that hydraulic ankle space right now at the K3 level, our current options are a Proteor Kintera and a College Park Odyssey, two of the most popular feet on the market. And our goal isn't to offer everyone's entire catalog, you know, for purchase. I'm sure that you've gotten lost in an SPS catalog or a vendor catalog, Brent, trying to decide between the 95 different low profile carbon feet that are out there. You know, we're giving you a peek into our practice of what our most successful solutions have been over time and what our most, you know, advantageous solutions for the patient have been over time. So, you know, we, in our OneSource platform, we've got K1, K2, K3 options with the most common coding sets. So, you know, for the K2, we look at that flexible keel, multi-axial ankle, or flexible keel, hydraulic ankle. We can add vacuum into those systems. At the K3, we look at the low profile carbon fiber feet, the hydraulic ankles, the vertical shock feet, the microprocessor ankles. We have mechanical knees. We have microprocessor knees in the platform, you know, and we're really selective in who we're letting into this OneSource group. You know, we only want to use the best of the best that are out there. And we want to be able to get our clients within OneSource a price that is either better than they're currently paying, whether it be direct through a manufacturer or through a distributor, or at least on par with what they're paying. But there's the added benefit of your notes are done, your compliance is in check, you have two diagnostic sockets coming with this OneSource package as well. We want to be able to offer someone a turnkey solution to be able to say, hey, you know, this has been the biggest struggle in my practice is trying to manage all these different balls that I have juggling in the air. We want you to say, hey, I need to focus on patient care, and OneSource is here to help me with that.
That's super cool. That's super cool, Tony. And I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the show today. I think this is a really, really fantastic story. Really great.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it. And, you know, really urge anyone to give me a call, send me a message on LinkedIn, you know, whatever it may be. I'm happy to walk you through OneSource and how it works, how it can affect your practice, and how it can stop you from coming in at 5 a.m. or on Saturdays and Sundays to get the work done. Because ultimately, all you want to do is take care of your patients. But you also got to take care of yourself and your family, too.
That's an absolutely wonderful sentiment. So thank you so much for being here today, Tony. And thanks as well for being a part of this, Brent.
Oh, this was great. And thanks, Tony, for sharing your kind of heart behind it and heartbeat behind it. And I know that you've got a ton of hours into this thing and really sharing that with the O&P community. So we are just better as a field together. And I think that's what I appreciate about you, Tony, and Bionic in general, along with Sagar and such. And the digital stuff is really the openness and letting other people learn from experience, which a lot of times involves costly mistakes. So thank you for coming on, for sure.
Thank you.
You guys, and take care, have a wonderful day.
Thanks everyone for listening. This is another episode of the Prosthetics and Orthotics Podcast.